So I guess in the last year, Austin has kind of exploded with all these different musicians. How would you describe the last year, if you could?
I think a lot of people in Austin in the last year suddenly met a lot of other people in Austin that they were like, oh shit. Because I was there for 2 years, and the first year I was doing my thing in dive bars and stuff and, you know, getting recognition outside of Austin, but I didn't find the Austin musicians. And then, like, about a year ago, I met a bunch of people all at once. I met Dave from Diamond Caverns, who's in New York. He's the guy on the Wonder Shows and Show, actually, which we were talking about earlier. And then Jared and Bill Baird and, like, all these kids. I met them, the kids from, like, Bel Air. Like, I met them on the same night, like, at this party. This girl, Star, who throws, like, amazing parties where, like, just, like, everybody loves Star, so everybody goes to the party or something. And, like, now she's in France. But it was just, like, a good night. And then, you know, a lot of these people remarked, you know, that they had met each other around then too, or something like that. Like, and a lot of people started saying, well, my friend Nathan, who's in, you know, tax and that kind of stuff, like,
yeah,
like, all everybody's just been commenting, like, wow, you know, it seemed like it was dried up for a while, and then all of a sudden we met each other. I mean, I'm sure that, like, the, you know, Jared had known the people he's been working with for a lot longer. He grew up there, and their band was going on for years or whatever. But I think that, because you hang out in a town long enough, I guess you're going to meet the other musicians. And,
yeah.
But yeah, the last year has been interesting.
At what point did you realize that this was an opportunity to start a label and to have my friends on the label on some level?
I had started it before then. Like, I came to Austin, and during that first year when I was just kind of doing weird stuff and playing almost, like, for myself, or playing shows, but kind of, I would go out in, like, disguise. I would go out, like, with a wig on and a hat and just, like, try different things out to see, like I wanted to know if, like, if you look like, I grew a mustache and, like, tried to look like a Vietnam vet or something. I wanted to know if, like, if you did that, like, if people, but you play the exact same songs, like, if people would respond differently. And it was like, so I started Whiskey and Apples, and I actually put out a bunch of different records in different styles, but it was all me.
Yeah.
So it would be like a pseudonym, like Old Crow Adams. It was just me, but, like, it was me with, like, a wig and a beard, and, like, he talked about, like, mescaline and, like, growing up in a trailer park and stuff. And, like, I kind of started it specifically to have, like,
fuel your personas.
Yeah, different sides of the personality, like, explore them and just see, like, you know, it's all me, but at the same time, like, that's not how everybody else sees it. Like, you know, certain records, like, got more attention, even though, you know, to me it was all the equal level of, like, expression or something.
Yeah.
So it was kind of experimenting with styles and stuff.
And at what point did you, have you always been wanting to play in, like, graveyards and these kind of non-traditional, certainly non-traditional, maybe even anti-traditional venues?
Yeah, they, I think, I don't remember when the idea, I think when we started Peter and the Wolf, Dana and I were really into, like, I was really, it was, like, kind of a dark time. I was, like, drinking a lot of whiskey and, like, kind of hanging out by myself and stuff, and, like, I got the idea of, like, that we were singing this music, but we were kind of, like, trying to channel something from a long time, like, 100 years ago, and I got the idea of doing it in...
What better place to channel?
Yeah, we did. We went to these graves. We selected the graves based on, like, we found, like, a husband and wife buried next to each other, and we tried to find the oldest one,
yeah.
And that, which was South by Southwest, 2004 was the first time we did that, and we found, like, these two people from the 19th century, you know, it was, like, Mr. and Mrs., like, Thatcher. It was, like, very American-sounding names.
Yeah.
It was, like, really fun. I mean, it was a trip, like, to try to express something like that.
Yeah.
There was, like, a small crowd there, and we just took pictures, and it was cool. That was the first time we did that.
And on the most recent Peter and the Wolf record, not the new one, there's a song, The Owl.
Yeah.
And then there's, like, owls throughout your site and throughout everything that you're doing. What is kind of your background or interest in owls? Why
it's
owls?
A bunch of different things that kind of caught my attention at the same time. One is that there's this guy, Dan Eldon, who's, like, kind of my hero. He's this photojournalist that went down to cover the, like, Somalia war in 1990, early 90s. And he was a kid. I mean, he was, like, the youngest writer's photographer ever at, like, 19. And he was the youngest person to do all these different things that he wasn't really trying to do. It was just part of his, like, life. He was a photographer, and he kept these elaborate journals. Basically, this kid was an adventurer who, like, was on like the righteous path, trying to like help the world by being a war journalist.
Yeah.
And he got killed by the people he was trying to help. He was stoned to death by a Somalian, like, people angered by one of the UN like bombings that went horribly wrong and like landed on like a apartment complex or something.
Yeah.
Dan Eldon's last day in Somalia, he went there to photograph that, and the mob turned on him, or the people became a mob and turned on him.
Yeah.
And but he left these journals behind, and one of the things he did, a lot of things, like he had a symbol that he drew over and over again that was these four arrows that point to each other, and he noticed owls and took pictures of them, and he said that they were like,
even in, like, Somalia,
he was photographing owls. Yeah, well, I don't know. I'm not sure if he saw them in Somalia or not, but I know that there's a lot of, if you look through his journals, there's a lot of owls, and he talks about them, and he said that they're his guides or something. And I gather that he's like a night person.
Promo shots, you have Noam Chomsky. Why did you include that? And why, more importantly, why did it get censored, or why did you remove some of the lettering from?
I think it was censored because, like, the all-seeing eye swept in and found each site that it ended up on and did something to it. It's pretty mysterious.
Really?
But I'm kidding. No, I did it on Photoshop.
Okay.
No, I did it because I wanted it to be more fun. Like, I didn't want it to be all, like, trying really hard to promote some book.
Yeah.
You know, because I'm not really. I just want it to be, like, a kind of like a riddle for friends who, like, get it, like, who, like, have read it or into it. I've had a couple different friends point it out because it just says fact con, where it used to say manufacturing consent.
Yeah.
But why Noam Chomsky is a big question. I mean, I'm not like an expert. I have a friend that's at NYU, you know, the PhD philosophy program, and anything I say is going to sound, you know,
ridiculous to him.
Ridiculous to him. But basically, Noam Chomsky's take on the media in our country for the last 40 years has been that he has this thing called a propaganda model, which he divides into sections and makes it manageable so you can understand the limitations of our media. And it's so important because it exposes, like, the why, and you know, why the interest groups would have so much influence over the media, and why, and like, it explains each time using statistics and just clarity, like, why you have to be skeptical of what you're told. And it's important now for people to be skeptical of the media. It's very, very important. You know? So it's like our Bible. It's like our future, you know?
Yeah.
Like, we have to stop living in a cloud.
And you think that relates to kind of what you're doing musically, or how you want to be portrayed, or it just coincidence that
No, yeah, I think there's got to be a similarity, because what I want as a musician is to travel and perform and perpetuate that, because the longer I can do it, the more into the art I can get. But I don't think that the notion of, like, celebrity and the notion of, like, you know, paparazzi who follow people and stuff like that, I don't want that to be affiliated with music, or at least the kind of music that I'm into. Like, indie rock is very big, and I like it a lot, but it's really, like, to me, it's so formulaic that I can't even consider it. It's like, fits perfectly into a commercial system that's already established. And so, you know, right now it's kind of important to, like, in the same way that Noam Chomsky would say that the media is operating under a propaganda model, to look at music as operating under a propaganda model.
Yeah.
Like, bands might be talking about nothing but good times in high school, and, you know, but if they take part in a system, they're still part of that system.
Yeah.
And so am I, and so are you. You know, we're in a car right now, sitting here. Everybody's in it, but I want to be clear about it with my, you know, I want to have a clear head about how music fits in to that. You know?
In those same photos, you have kind of a, what is the phrase used to describe your posse, your group?
Oh, I guess it would be fellow survivors of a plane crash on the old airport runway in Austin. So fellow survivors. That's what they are.
Yeah. So are they the Whiskey and Apples?
Oh yeah, Whiskey and Apples is mainly, like, it's a website and a blog through which I try to promote my friend's music and my own. Right now, like, the only thing on the artist page is Peter and the Wolf, because I don't know enough about web design to quickly change it before I left for tour.
Okay.
And I had friends call me and be like, hey, what's up? Like, it's just Peter and the Wolf right now. I was like, yeah, just give me a couple, you know, 10 weeks on the road and I'll fix it. I want to put more music up there for more people. Like, my friend Josh is hanging out with me tonight, helped me produce, you know, was in there every day with me making this record on his computer. And I want to involve his music in it when I get back from tour. He's really talented.
Have you kind of tried to take some of the presentation of being in graveyard in these kind of these contexts to a recording? Do you think about all that?
Totally. There was temptation on the thing we were doing now to be more like that. We ended up going, ended up deciding on doing just a simple recording on a computer and not putting a lot of fuss on it. But there is the idea of, like, doing a record in a setting where the sound of the setting, even interacting with the setting, takes place. Like, imagine if you had a record in, like, a spooky cave and, like, things were happening. People were actually getting spooked by stuff.
Yeah.
While they were making
the recording. That you weren't creating.
Yeah, so you'd be, like, actually interacting with reality. That might be... We're going to make a record in December in Los Angeles, and I think there might be some real...
Yeah.
Interesting kind of experiments like that.
To where the artist is not even in full control, precisely, as in a studio.
Precisely. I mean, being on the road, like, the way we do it, we're in this, like, rickety car and stuff. You know, I mean, everybody does that. And just, you're not in control. And,
yeah.
You know, there's no point in pretending you are. You're just... I want to feel like as respected in society as like a public school teacher. No more, no less. No hype. What public school teacher is famous?
Yeah.
You know, like, we don't hype them. They're just like awesome helpers of society. And so are musicians. And that's like kind of how I want it to be.
How did the idea to do the sailboat tour with Jenna and the Casanet, Ray, right?
Yep. With Ray. Ray's going to jump on at the last minute, but mostly it's been me and Jenna working on this thing. Of course, Ray's music is going to be a huge part of the adventure because he's got adventurous music. I mean, really talented. But he'll be finishing a tour on the West Coast and literally like jumping onto our thing. But Jan and I started talking about it at a bar one time and just
like all seriousness or kind of
pure fantasy beer influence conversation about how fun it would be. I was like, how rad would it be? Like, because she was telling me what clubs she played at. It was the same ones I played. I was like, oh, we all play the same clubs. What is this? We're like cookie cutters. We could do anything. Like, how rad would it be to take a sailboat? And she was like, you know, went along with it. And the next thing I know, she found it. Like, she took like a dumb like conversation and turned into a reality and continues like to this minute to make it real. Like, she's so grounded in like what's going on. It's fucking cool.
Yeah.
August 19th through September 5th or so will be on a boat, which I hear is a lot more work than I thought it was. I thought it was going to be like Caribbean adventure, like cruise adventure, like, but apparently we all have to work.
Coronas and
yeah.
Relaxing.
Yeah, a little gecko somewhere.
Yeah, and now you're going to end up being like...
Soaking wet
and learning how to like starboard and all that stuff.
Precisely, learning is the big thing.
Are you going to have to start researching now?
Actually, I am in a research-free zone. Like the captain knows what's up.
Okay.
He owns the boat and he's a sailor. He's smart and skilled, but the four of us, the three musicians and Kenny, who's going to be filming it, like, don't have a clue, man. Yeah. Jan is getting a clue because she's learning about it.
What is your intentions with the video?
I think that interesting things are going to happen, and it's going to be nothing like what I envisioned. Like, what I envisioned was, like, we're going to be, like, chilling on this boat, and the interview could, unless we're, like, in the right mood, the interview could just be, like, us chilling on a boat, but now I realize, like, it's going to be, like, us, like, fighting nature to get to where we're going, so it should be pretty cool. Actually.
So they're gonna play it in like IMAX theaters and stuff.
No. But I think we'll make a DVD of it and put it on Whiskey and Apples and/or/ Asthmatic Kitty wants to do something with it.
Cool.
So we'll have it available in different places. I think.
I guess my last question is, what is the end point with Whiskey and Apples? Where do you see it? Where's like a goal? Do you want it to become like an official label?
I gotta tell you, man, that I am like living the dream. Like, I was thinking about this the other day. It is exactly where I fantasized it would be. And here's why. I just agreed to put out a record on a label called Workers Institute, which like is a very small label operated by a guy kind of just privately, small amounts of records, couple thousand, 5,000, 10,000, whatever. And his next record is gonna be the Sigur Rós EP followed by our record. And wow. So it's like a tiny label, but he's just like got his value straight in Sigur Rós, friends of his from the label he was at and stuff. And like, so while I'm putting the record out, he's just cool with me also putting it on my own label. Like, it's just, he's just going to manufacture X number of records and we're going to put the records out, but then I'm still going to do it on Whiskey and Apples. So basically, like, it's like a fruit stand in cyberspace. You know, I sell my records. People who walk by, if they want them, they buy them. It's like perfect. It's perfect. It's making me very happy. Gorgeous record.